Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And welcome into Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode taking you through this Tuesday morning. Marquise Munson behind the glass. Boys, what's going on?
My microphone is sagging a little bit. Did I break this?
A sagging microphone.
I might have broken this.
No, you didn't break it. You just... got to tighten it up a little bit.
Is that it? Okay. I can crouch down a little bit. What's up, guys?
Rex Rode.
Joe's already messing
his technical issue.
In my studio.
Hey, I hit the button when I had to talk.
Well, that's true.
I'm one for one.
That's true. Munson, what's going on, buddy?
Nothing much, man. The Lakers.
Hey,
doing pretty well right now. So,
the one seed.
Better than the Grizzlies.
Two and two right now. We'll talk about that later. Ugh. Grizzlies.
Yeah, boy.
I was rooting for you. We were all rooting for you.
And it's not over yet.
Could be a.
It's not over yet, but it's not looking too good.
It's not.
Over is in the distance, my friend. You can see it.
See, I was excited too because I was like, yes, return to play. Tennessee sports going to be killing the game. You got the Preds lost game one, and then it's just like, oh, that's a bummer. And then the Grizzlies go 0-3, and they're return to play. And then it's like, oh, man, this is supposed to be like, Tennessee, we're going to run this return to play. And then, you know.
Yep.
So far, not so good. Hopefully the Preds can end that tonight.
Yeah, hopefully they can.
It is game day.
The Nashville Predators game day today. Game two coming up against the Arizona Coyotes. Puck drop, I believe, at 1:30. So that's exciting. Another, more afternoon hockey. I love afternoon hockey.
Oh, man.
I'm cool with it.
Cannot beat it.
I know some of you are thinking, you know, I'm going to be at work. This doesn't do me much good. But I love afternoon hockey.
I mean, there are a lot more people still working remotely now,
sure.
Right? Now, although I will say driving in here every day, a lot of people aren't working remotely.
I know.
It's very much like classic, you know, 5:30 in the morning traffic from pre-pandemic, but there's got to be a lot of people still at home. So you can sort of put it on the background, put mute on, whatever you need to do, right? That's not a bad thing.
Yeah. Joe, I got in bed last night at like 9 o'clock because I'm an old man. Didn't watch any of the Edmonton-Chicago game. Woke up this morning, saw some highlights. Man, is Connor McDavid pretty good. Hat trick last night against Chicago, winning, what they win, 6-3? Is that the final?
Yeah, 6-3.
6-3.
Yeah. Yeah,
not a lot of defense being played in that series.
Well, that series is, man. Yeah, I was like, well, I'm not going to watch this game. I just gave up on it. I watched the Montreal-Pittsburgh game, which was really good.
Yeah.
Matt Murray, Carey Price duel. That was excellent playoff hockey. And then, I mean, before I even went to bed, McDavid had two goals. And then Kane scores, and I'm like, I got to go to bed.
And
I'm not surprised at the score.
No.
That's some fire wagon hockey, baby.
Yeah, it is. Edmonton evens the series at 1 with Chicago. Pittsburgh evens the series at 1 with Montreal. And the Jets clutch last night, 3-2 win against the Calgary Flames in a series where there's already some bad blood. So you can tell that's kind of exuding itself on the ice.
Yeah, no Scheifele, no Laine, and clutch gutty win. Unfortunately for them... this back-to-back thing, I mean, I wouldn't think either of those guys. I mean, Scheifele, what? That could be real bad.
That could be
right?
Bad.
Which, again, we talked about yesterday. I don't think Tkachuk did that on purpose at all.
No.
I don't see. I mean, who's out there trying to cut someone with their skates? I mean, what? You know, come on, Paul Maurice. Look, I like Paul Maurice, but come on.
The
man.
Only reason that people have even said that is because of who it was, because it was Matthew Tkachuk. It's a ridiculous assertion. You know how fast they were moving? He's not out there just like as a surgical strike with his foot cutting somebody's leg.
Yeah, I'm going to slice your Achilles. Yeah. Come on. But he's, you know, Scheifele's a huge loss. Obviously, Patrick Laine would be good to get back. Maybe they'll get him back today. But that was a gutty win for them, for sure. And this already just been some great stuff in this playoff. And it starts early, goes all day. Got it again today.
Yeah. Carolina just dismantling the New York Rangers, up 2-0 in that series, a 4-1 win yesterday for Carolina. Some of the round robin action, I mean, it's been okay. Capitals Lightning yesterday was okay.
Yeah,
the Stars got up 3-1 and then just totally fell apart in the third period, lost 5-3.
Yeah,
to Vegas.
My goodness, Vegas went off on them. Those games, I mean, look, the Blues, I watched most of the Blues Avs game, and obviously that ended, you know, 0.1, Kadri scores. That was good, but those games just, I know seeding is still important, but that's, it's basically playing out the regular season. It's just,
yeah, like it's
not nearly what the other games are.
It's hard to get excited about that because, like, yes, it's for seeding. But how much does seeding, I guess, really matter at this point? There's no fans. There's no home ice advantage. You're just playing. So it's just,
right.
It takes a little of the luster away from it.
Well, it's like the Preds game today. Normally, in normal times, we'd be like, you better not lose this home game because now you're going to zone after
yeah.
this. You want to, you know, like, and even if you win this game, you have to win a game in Arizona. Now it's just like, go back to your rooms. We'll see you at the rink tomorrow.
We'll see you there.
Fellas.
You will play
today. Get some rest. Brush your teeth.
You will play Wednesday as well.
Yeah, so that is, it's, you're right. It takes away that importance, and then you don't even know who you're going to play. You know, I mean, all these matchups could be a problem, as we're seeing with Montreal and Chicago.
Yeah.
It's playoff hockey. So, you know, you can like or not like that, but it's a reality of hockey. I happen to like it a lot. I just, right now, if I have a round robin or a qualifying game, there's no comparison
yep.
in the intensity.
Well, looking ahead, the Preds game two today against Arizona, trailing 1-0 in the series. Joe, when I think about what I want to see from the Preds in game two today, I mean, obviously there's the, hey, you got to win this game. There's that goes without saying. It's not impossible to lose this game, come back, win the series. It's not very likely either. So this is I would classify this as a must-win game today for the Predators. And we talked yesterday about some areas in front of the net on both sides of the ice, both defensively, where they just basically let Christian Dvorak and Clayton Keller sit there unimpeded in game one and get prime scoring opportunities, which, of course, they cashed in on. And then on the other side, not doing a good enough job of getting to those hard areas. That's got to be the number one thing I'm looking for today is you've got to find a way, number one, keep the Arizona Coyotes away from your net. Your mentality needs to be, I'm not letting anyone get near my goalie. At least not without a fight. That's got to be the mentality that you have. Now, obviously, that's not always going to work, but that's going to have to be the mentality that you have. And on the other side, I'm looking at two guys in particular. Ryan Johansson, Matt Duchene got to get to the net. That's what I'm looking for today. I think Forsberg can do it. Forsberg's skilled enough, we saw in game one. He can get scoring opportunities other way. Duchene, Johansson, not really getting scoring opportunities any other way right now. Get to the net. That's what I'm looking for today.
Yeah, those are good. I mean, that's the thing with the exhibition, which I think we, you know, took that for what it was. It was a good performance. There were some things that translated. I mean, I think there were two positives to me in game one. One was the power play.
Yep.
And the other was, to me, was Saros and how he responded to a terrible first period from his teammates.
Yeah.
They hung him out to dry, and he hung in there and gave them a chance to win. Those two things. So the power play translated. One thing that didn't, that I thought was really good in the exhibition, was how they did what you just said in the defensive zone.
Yep.
They were rock solid, and that has been such an emphasis for John Hines, and it has been such a problem this year, weirdly, to me. I mean, if there's one thing about this team pre-Hines, in the last days of Peter Laviolette, in the last season, like the defensive sloppiness and just, you know, just weirdly bad nights, I didn't, that wasn't something that I had come to expect, right? I mean,
right.
It's like the penalty kill this year. That's always been solid. But that looked good against Dallas. It was like, okay, you've had this time with Hines, you've had this extra time to study everything. You've had this training camp, and now they get it, and they've got a really nice thing going. And then Taylor Hall's just by himself, and Clayton Keller's by himself, and just some weird – I mean, those are two quick snap decision mistakes, but, man, you cannot have those anymore.
No, you can't. And, I mean, this should be without saying, and I think it will be. I think this part of their game will be there today, and that is urgency, desperation. Like, there needs to be some urgency – to get things done offensively today when you get in the zone. Like, you're down 1-0 in a best-of-five series. You know, we've talked about getting to the net and keeping people away from the net, but just when there's a loose puck in the corner, there needs to be some urgency for you to go win that battle. And I think we'll see that today. I'm not saying there was a lack of urgency in game one, because I thought, you know, especially obviously after they got down, they did push to get back in and had the urgency there. But if something goes wrong today, if you start the period and, you know, Taylor Hall is clearing the puck into the zone and it goes off the stanchion and into the net, you can't not let that turn into 12 minutes of just falling apart,
right,
and getting dominated. You've got to be able to respond to some adversity today.
And you won't respond. The thing that they didn't have was composure there. So Tenorti immediately goes to the box, and on and on and on. And Deschene and Johansson, and you, I mean, it's composure that you have to have. Like, I didn't think during that stretch that they were, you know, lacking effort.
Sure.
But, yeah, if you are killing penalties, then what are you going to do? How are you getting back in this game? And then, again, making these mistakes. I mean, Ryan Ellis, you know, Philip Forsberg, two of their best players, made mistakes in that game that were critical. They also scored goals.
Yeah.
I mean, you give some and you take some, but they can't give them anymore.
No. I mean, it's going to be crucial today. And, look, I mean, who knows if we're going to see Nick Schmaltz or not, or what the Coyotes are going to look like. Are they going to leave Hall and Kessel together? Like, what's their game plan going to be? I suspect it's not going to look much different for the Coyotes than it did in game one. So you look at that, if you're the Predators, yeah, they're loading up that one line with Hall and Kessel. That should give you an advantage elsewhere with guys like Duchesne and Granlund and Turris. That's the other thing I'm looking for today. You need the top line to be better than it was, 5-on-5, no question about it. That second line has got to generate something offensively. They've got to find a way to break through the wall that the Coyotes are trying to put up around their net and look dangerous. I mean, they had maybe, I think you said, one shift in game one where they looked dangerous and really caught Arizona in transition on that shift. So right, it's not like they were sitting in the offensive zone setting things up. They need to look more dangerous 5-on-5 in the offensive zone today.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, Johansson is, if I had to pick one player today that I'm going to watch, it's Johansson, who, again, I didn't think was bad in game one, but he has to be better than not bad. He can be better than not bad. Too often this year he's been not bad or worse.
Right.
But that guy can flip things and make it a problem. And I would expect what you just said. I mean, Schmaltz, if you saw that hit he took from Ryan Reeves,
probably not coming back.
It's purely speculation, but I would guess it's going to be a while for him.
He might be unfit to play today, is what you're saying.
I would think that he would get the U,
okay,
the U tag.
I think you're probably right there. When we come back, what do we think the Preds are going to do about their goalie situation should they win game two today? Going to be an interesting predicament for John Hines heading into game three. We'll talk about that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Yeah, you know, I think anytime, Paul, you get into a back-to-back situation or 3-4, you know, but really what this is, 3 games in 4 days, is you're really, you know, I think you have to take it day by day, but you also have to have the mindset that you need to have both goalies prepared and ready to play. And I think then you have to go day by day. You have to see what, you know, sometimes when you get into back-to-back situations, you might look at, maybe you feel like the guy that's playing the game is playing really well, and but his workload wasn't that heavy. He played the whole game, but maybe his workload wasn't that heavy, as opposed to maybe, you know, a guy's got to stop 45 shots and he, you know, he's been under duress most of the night. I think you have to really look at the game day and the game in particular before you can make the final decision on whether you think it's right or wrong for a player mentally and physically, particularly a goalie, to be able to play back to back. But, you know, there are certain times where guys do it, and guys have done it a lot and have been successful at it too. So it's a situation by situation basis.
Inconceivable, unbelievable, grandma like a hammer, information receivable, sent by the Lord.
That was Predators head coach John Hines talking about the goaltending situation heading into games 2 and 3 in the series against the Arizona Coyotes. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic. And Joe, we've talked about this really since last week that we were on the air, and really since this matchup has come out and we knew the schedule. Games 2 and 3, you're talking about a back-to-back set when you haven't really played consistent stretches of hockey in almost 5 months, it's going to be interesting how John Hines handles this. Now, I think conventional wisdom would tell me that if you're the Predators and you lose today and UC Saros is the goalie, kind of regardless of how it goes, if you lose, I'd probably expect to see Pekka tomorrow. That's just the way that I kind of anticipate that going.
What if you lose 1-0 in double overtime?
We'll see.
Well, then you're definitely doing it. Yeah,
well,
never
mind. You've played double overtime at that point.
Yeah, you're right. That's a bad question. 1-0, not overtime.
It's tough. I mean, I guess it depends on the workload at that point. I still think there's a chance you'd see Pekka.
Yeah.
At that point.
Yeah.
But like, what happens if they win? So you win today. It's 1-1. You're heading into a crucial game 3 tomorrow, and we've known that this could be a possibility all week as we've discussed this back-to-back set. I'm operating under the assumption that Saros is going to start today. Even though Hines has not said that, that's the way I'm operating. That's the way I'm going with this. What happens? What do you do if you're John Hines should the Predators win today and you're forced with a goaltender decision to make tomorrow for Game 3?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm not – I'd go 99.9% positive that Saros starts today. Maybe that's a little bit high on the confidence level, but – I don't see after you make that tough decision for game one, what you would have seen in that game that would have made you switch. And if you, again, the whole thinking here is also you have to think long term, even though you may be done this week. You have to think over a haul.
Yeah,
gonna need both. What are you doing to Saros if you pull him after that game? That doesn't make sense.
No.
So I think you're right. I think it's an easy one that Saros starts today. So if they win, you know, some of it honestly is like asking him to be honest too about how he feels, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I would think you have to try to take everything into account. It seems to make sense to go to Pekka Rinne for tomorrow. But, yeah, if Saros is just really good today and you flipped it and you feel like you've got momentum in the series now, Saros is young. It's not like it's
yeah. –
I mean, that's the thing. It's hard because in we only see back-to-backs in the regular season. We don't see them in the postseason. So, there's so little precedent for this. I think it was, what, 4 or 5 years ago was the last time it was a game 1 and 2 of a series.
With the Islanders, because their building is so screwed up, you had to – change things around.
Is that what it was?
I think so. Yeah.
So, like in my mindset, it's like, of course you go to the other goalie, but I don't know. I think if it was the other way around, like had they gone with Rinne and in the exact same situation, then I think it's easy. Like you're not putting the 37-year-old out there 2 days in a row.
Right.
But you could do that with Saros.
You could. And I think a lot of it is going to depend on workload. Like if Arizona comes out today and they're not really all that threatening. They get 21 shots on goal, and Saros doesn't have to work hard, and they win the game. I'd say there's probably a decent chance Saros is going to be back out there tomorrow. I mean, it's just the way it's probably going to go. Now, if you go out and it's a 3-2 game, it ends in regulation, but it's a 3-2 game. The Predators win. Saros has faced, 29, 30 shots. Some of them have been where he's had to work pretty hard on. Then you've got an interesting decision. Like, it's easy to say, if Saros goes out today, they win 2-1, but he faces 55 shots. He's probably not playing tomorrow. But it's when you get into that 30 range, and that's kind of an interesting decision you're going to have to make because, yeah, he'd probably be okay going again tomorrow. Like, I mean, think about the AHL when you're in Milwaukee. Saros spent a lot of time there. You play back-to-back all the time. Like, there's a lot of times you play Friday, Saturday, Sunday in the AHL. Now, your goalie's probably not playing all three, but a lot of times they play either Friday and Sunday or Friday, Saturday, and they're off Sunday. Like, that's just the way it goes sometimes in the American Hockey League. That's going to be the interesting point to me is, like, if the Preds win 3-2 today, Saros is tested a little, but he's placed, like, 35 shots. What do you do then? Because I would honestly be at that point probably tempted to go back with him if he plays well again today just because I think from a body standpoint he can handle it.
What's the most grueling thing about being a goaltender? I mean, is it – to me, that's the idea of even crouching on skates for that long.
Yeah.
It's like a catcher in baseball. I couldn't imagine doing it for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So is it just being out there, or is it, you know, like facing shots? How much more does that add to like your exhaustion level? Yeah. I don't know.
It's pushing off. I mean, you're going side to side across the crease.
Just more, more exertion.
More exertion, yeah. More stretching. Like, there's a lot of things that go into it. Like, a guy like Soros, I mean, you've heard stories around the NHL. They used to have a goalie here named Dan Ellis. And people used to talk about he would lose, like, 12 pounds in a game.
Wow.
Just in terms of his workload. Now, not everybody's like that. I mean, usually if you're a goalie, you'll lose maybe a pound or two just in sweat. But some guys lose a ton. So I don't know where Soros falls in on that. Like, I don't think he loses a ton of weight every time he goes out there and then just stuffs his face with, like, spaghetti or something after.
Sounds like a great life.
I know, right? Yeah, I wish I could do that. But it is going to be interesting, the decision they make. Again, I think if you lose game two, regardless of how it goes in goal, it's easy to kind of justify putting in Packer tomorrow just because you want to change things up. You've already lost the first two games at that point, for the sake of this argument, and maybe it's not even Soros' fault today, but you're just changing things up at that point. I can anticipate that happening. It's when you win, and he's faced like a medium workload, I think that's going to be such an interesting decision for John Hines if they win today.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, look, I could also turn around and say you lose 1-0 and Soros is just incredible.
Yeah.
Like, why are you switching?
Right.
But I think to your point, you need to do something, and you have the easy excuse of, man, you played incredible, but we can't put you right back out there tomorrow.
Right.
I'm sure in his mind, you know, John Hines is very with us. It's very, this is when I'll make the decision. This is when I'll tell them. No, I'm not telling you a thing. You know, it's very, but I'm sure
he's got a plan.
Well, and a plan, and also I'm sure he's thought of all these different, because there's so many different little variables in all the different ways that it could go here. And I'm sure that in his mind he's thought about all of it. But I think you just have to ask Soros to be honest after this game, and then you have to go with your gut. And obviously, John Hines hopes that he's got a win to ponder on, and you know that would be much preferred to have a win and have that problem than be sitting there at 2-0 and probably have an easy decision.
I mean, we talked about it yesterday on the show, and I mentioned it a little bit yesterday on my podcast as well. There is a ton of pressure on this team in this game, and I know some people may be listening and thinking, well, I mean, why? It's a weird season. You had the 4.5-month pause. It's a tournament that you've never had to deal with before. Why is there pressure on this group? You don't win today. You end up losing this series. It's hard to justify to me anyway, bringing this group back the same next year without some significant change to it. Like, you're going to have, I mean, Craig Smith and Mikael Granlund are both free agents. Probably not going to be able to bring both of them back, but we've known that for a while. I would say maybe some additional changes to that if you don't win this series. And that's why I think if you're a player on this team, especially a player that's a core member and who's been here a long time, I think you have to recognize that today. That should fuel the urgency that you play with, because, I mean, you're essentially playing, in my view, in this series and in this playoff run, for the right to stay together with a team that you've become so close to.
Yeah. I mean, 2 years ago, it was campaigning to David Poile, and he listened, and it hasn't worked out since then. Here, someone had a comment on my GameCom the other day. Why don't you, if this blows up, why don't you leave one of your top people open for the Kraken to just take, you know, salary dump? You know, because I mean, we've kind of assumed that like a Sissons would probably be heading to Seattle, something like that.
As soon as Sissons signed that contract, I was like, oh boy, that looks real good for a Seattle Kraken.
Yeah.
Because I doubt Sissons is going to be a guy they protect. Maybe he is, but I doubt it.
Maybe they just,
I mean,
say,
they did protect Yarncroke last time. So,
Yes.
Who knows?
The Yarncroke James Neal decision.
Still gets
Let's
people fired up.
Let's revisit that one.
Still gets people fired up around here. When we come back, our good friend Floyd Reese, former Titans GM and co-host of Jared and the GM, will join us. That's next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Neil, I'm just wondering, you tweeted out something about, you know, the idea of a possible bubble situation, which obviously isn't happening. I'm just wondering right now, what's your confidence level in the NFL's plan taking us through the end of a season here?
I'm pretty sure everything I've been told, the first 2 weeks are the most important, guys, being smart. Because once you get through those first 2 weeks with a huge percentage, I think the idea of tests being positive go way down with guys starting to get in the groove of the season. You know, as far as a bubble system like that, it was, you know, as a player who is on Twitter thinking out loud, hoping a season's happening, right? It's not like I'm in meetings with Goodell and the boys trying to fix rechange the wheel or, you know, reinvent the wheel or anything like that. I'm just trying to figure out the best way so I can be safe and have a football season. So, but a bubble, you know, if it wasn't, they must have had a reason why they didn't do it. I think for us, it's just being as smart as we possibly can, making sure our families are safe, and getting ready to play football, which is the most important thing when we're in this building.
That was Titans left tackle Taylor Lewan on a great question by Rex Rowe.
Brilliant question.
A great question
not
by Joe Rex Rowe.
Not really, but.
Talking about the NFL season, what it may look like, the lack of a bubble, all of these things that have become commonplace in today's discussion of the NFL. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroth. And we are pleased to bring in our good friend Floyd Reese, former Titans GM and host of Jared and the GM in the afternoons here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Floyd, what's going on, my friend? Welcome back from vacation.
No, thank you. Good to be back. How are y'all doing?
Doing great, good. Floyd. And Floyd, before we get into some Titans talk here, just real quickly, your reaction to the Preds being down a game in this series. What do you think they have to do in game two to get back on the right side of things?
You know, I think number one, they probably have to figure out a way to not lose, you know? I mean, they were the best team, in my opinion, especially you get down to the third period. I mean, I thought it was obvious they were the better team, but they just kept, you know, giving them a chance to beat them. You know, well, we'll give you another penalty. Here you go. Go on another power play. Let's see how that works. You know, they had a couple of freaky kind of goals that bounced in, bounced around, and, you know, ended up being a score. And we didn't react very well. But I didn't think, we just didn't play real smart hockey at times. And you know, it's hard to beat even bad teams if you're not going to go out and play your game.
So, Floyd, the Titans have kind of started camp in a year that, you know, something like we've never seen before and probably never will again. What is your assessment right now of what the NFL is doing, how things look, and maybe even how baseball and its struggles play into concerns about, you know, what's ahead for the NFL?
You know, you have to really be concerned, I think. You know, you look at what baseball's doing and what's happening to them, and, you know, here they've been playing for 10 days or whatever, and they're already down two teams. And you kind of look at that and you think, okay, is that an indicator of what's going to come? Because if it is, your season's not going to be very long, and if it's not going to be very long for baseball, then, you know, I think all the other sports have to kind of look at themselves and say, you know, you're one trip to the store or one bad party or something away from losing the league. It's got to be a major concern. I mean, I think it's interesting because I think if you look at those situations, you look at what NFL teams are doing, for example, or any team, you know, the NHL, look at what they're doing. And you think, can there be a safer place on earth to be away from this than where they are? I mean, you know, it's a heck of a lot safer than going to the store or going to the gas station or going and, you know, you don't know who those people are. And here you are quarantined, doing everything correctly and everything right. You know, if you have people in those situations turn up getting sick, then, you know, you have to kind of think to yourself, well, you know, the rest of us are really have to be lucky or, you know, really smart or something, because it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough for anybody to get past that lives a normal life. You know, that you're going to go out and you're going to do the regular stuff, and it's out there.
Floyd, if you're John Robinson, how concerned would you be about the Vic Beasley situation, not reporting to camp at first, not communicating with the team that he wasn't going to be reporting to camp, given the reputation that Beasley had anyway in Atlanta? How concerned would you be if you're John Robinson?
Yeah, I'm concerned. I think you have to look at those things and you try to figure out the reasons why. Okay, what would it be that would cause you to go AOL from going to work for a period of time after, you know, signing a contract and getting $6 million and whatever it was, and all of a sudden you decide to not only go, but not call and tell anybody or not let anybody know what's going on. You say, well, what would cause that? You think, well, there's something really, really bad with him or with his family, and he's a very private guy, and he wants to keep that to himself. And you go, well, I guess I can understand that. You know, or the other end of that is, well, he's really not very interested in what he's doing. You know, he's really not very interested in the Titans or in playing or, being a part of a team. And you look at it and you go, well, you know, neither one of those are very good. And you know, in either case, it's not going to be something that, you know, the Titans are going to be happy dealing with. And so I don't, you know, to me, all those things always boil down to more than, you know, I just didn't call. Really? Didn't I give you a check for $6 million? I mean, you were certainly there to pick that up. And so, I don't know. It's scary. I don't like this.
So let's take worst case scenario on that then, Floyd. If this team ends up without, and the NFL does have an official opt-out deadline, by the way, that's Thursday at 4, according to Adam Schefter, which is kind of, it was supposed to be 7 days after the signing of the CBA, but they've kind of compromised on that. So a couple more days here, and we're going to know who's in and out. Let's say he's out. What is this? If you're looking at this team, how are you feeling about the pass rush situation, which, of course, was already, I think, the number one thing that needed to be addressed, and how do you view the potential pursuit of a guy in Jadeveon Clowney who now knows you don't just want him, you might need him?
Well, I think you know, first of all, the pass rush would only be better if, in fact, you know, the young guys improved. Because that's the only chance you're having, is that some of these guys that didn't play or didn't play as much as you wanted are going to come in and they're going to, for whatever reason, light it up. And we all know the chances of that really are not very good. And so then you're saying, okay, what do you do? And the one thing Dean Pease did last year was I thought he did an outstanding job at times of manufacturing pass rush. You know, he had a Logan Ryan that he would blitz, and, you know, Logan ended up with, what, 4 or 5 sacks, whatever it was. But, you know, he had some guys that he could do that with. I'm not sure, I'm not saying they can't, but I'm not sure it's going to be the same this year. That's something we're going to have to see. But, you know, the Clowney thing all boils down to, you know, do you in fact, you know, one, does he fit your system? And two, do you think he is the answer to pass rush? You know, is he a guy that's going to come in and you know, I mean, I think it with Beasley, you'd seen him get 15 or 16 sacks or whatever it was at a point in time in Atlanta, and you've seen him get, I don't know, 4 or 5 sacks, you know, not very many. And you're thinking to yourself, okay, just don't give me either end of that. You know, give me something in the middle. Give me 10 sacks. And if you can get 10 sacks out of him, you'd probably be thrilled. And I think you have to ask yourself, okay, if that's what I was counting on, can I get 10 sacks out of Clowney? And, you know, if you think you can, then, you know, you probably got to go with it. Let's face it, that, you know, if he's going to have a chance to play and be anything like who he was in Houston, the one year that he played the best under Mike, then, you know, this ought to be the place to do it.
Floyd, last thing for you here. A popular topic of conversation has been the Titans and who's going to call plays on defense, Mike Vrabel, Shane Bowen, as you're kind of evaluating the Titans and the head coach calling plays in today's NFL, how would you handle that situation of calling plays defensively?
Yeah, that's really, really tough. I don't think – now, this will sound crazy to a lot of people, but in my opinion, it's harder to call plays as a head coach on defense than it is to call plays as a head coach on offense. And consequently, you know, it eats up so much of the time for a guy that's calling defenses and trying to talk to players and do all those kinds of things that I think it makes it really, really difficult for a head coach. Generally speaking, it's interesting because what you usually get in a situation like this is you'll get a head coach that will do one of two things. He will either not have a great deal to do with the defense on a daily basis. That is, he doesn't go in and run the meetings. He doesn't go in and evaluate film. He doesn't go in and evaluate practice. He lets, you know, Bowen in this case do that. And then shows up on game day with his little play sheet and tries to call plays. Or they go the opposite with it. You know, he goes and spends a lot of time with defense during the week and does, in fact, run most of the meetings and evaluates tape, et cetera. And then when it comes game day, kind of turns it over to a senior member of the staff or to somebody he has complete confidence in, and they call a lot of the plays, a lot of the defenses on Sunday. So I don't, you know, there's really not enough hours in the day for a head coach to do both those things. And I think Mike is going to find that out. And how they break that down from there, I don't know. It's going to be interesting.
Floyd Reese, former Titans GM and co-host of Jared and the GMs in the afternoons here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, has been our guest. Floyd, thanks for joining us, my friend, as always. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Absolutely. When we come back, we'll dive into that a little bit more. What should the Titans do about their defensive play caller? That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. RockNashville.com is your community resource page. Check it out for information around town, including Nashville's Good to Go initiatives, CDC updates, ways to help the Middle Tennessee community. That's RockNashville.com. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic taking you through this Tuesday morning. Enjoyed having Floyd Reese on in the last segment. Always interesting insight. And one of the things he talked about, Joe, was the idea of Mike Vrabel calling plays defensively in addition to his responsibilities as head coach. And I think the way that Floyd has felt just from talking to him and the way that I've continued to feel, it's going to be really difficult, I think, to put the appropriate amount of attention to both aspects should Mike Vrabel decide to go this route. Now, I'm not saying it's going to be impossible. I think he could probably pull it off if he wants to. But I am interested to see how much of the responsibility ultimately will lie with Mike Vrabel and how much gets, you know, put off on Shane Bowen or somebody else. Like which direction the Titans decide to go with their play calling defensively on Sundays.
Yeah, it's an interesting point by Floyd about the, you know, the idea that it's harder to call plays defensively than offensively as a head coach. It makes sense. The offense sort of dictates, this is what we're doing. This is the situation, and in this situation, we're doing this. And obviously, you can check at the line. Defense a little bit more reactive. I mean, you have to. Obviously, you're planning for situations too, but sometimes you got to make a quick personnel decision. You know, you see them change personnel, things like that. It seems like someone up in the box. I know it happens. Certainly, there are DCs who are on the field, but I would say there's a vast majority are in the box. So maybe Shane Bowen does it. I've been intrigued since they added Jim Haslett.
Yeah.
You know, just as, I mean, the fact is the guy's been, a DC, I think. Obviously, he's been a head coach of the Saints, but he was a D coordinator for the Saints, Steelers, Rams, Redskins. I mean, he's been a D coordinator for a lot of years in this league, called defensive plays for a lot of years in this league. Now, I know you're talking about someone who just joined the staff, but I wouldn't think that would necessarily rule him out either from having some kind of a role there. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I thought maybe Vrabel would tell us, but he's still not telling us. And he said, you know, they're going to try some things out when they actually have scrimmage situations. So maybe it's they just don't feel like telling us. Maybe it's they're still not sure and they just want to test some things out. I when Floyd was talking about planning, I think for sure that, you know, Mike Vrabel will be heavily involved in the plan. I think he was even with Dean Pease. So that part of it, I think he can handle, and that's, I don't think that that's going to be out of the ordinary for him. But yeah, the play calling itself is going to be very interesting, and multiple options there.
Yeah, multiple options, and I wonder, like, in terms of the COVID part of this, like, with all of these different hoops they're going to have to jump through in terms of making sure your players are quarantined, you know, operating practices differently in terms of, you know, you go out there, you practice on the field. When you come back in, I mean, the meetings are going to be different. Like, you're not going to have the entire defense in one room. Like, you're going to have people spread out as much as humanly possible, which is probably going to add some time to your day if you're Mike Vrabel. Like, does that affect at all the play calling part of this? Because you heard Floyd say it there. I mean, the time from a head coaching standpoint, already pretty limited anyway. You add in all these regulations and things you're going to have to monitor with COVID. Does that have an impact on what they end up having to do from a play calling standpoint? It's going to be interesting to monitor that as well.
Yeah, I think that they've got, I mean, they're using their bubble. So
sure.
So when they go full O, full D, special teams or team, they've got that space. And then, you know, some of the position rooms have had to go into bigger rooms. So I don't know if that'll be a time thing. It'll certainly be different. But another part of the COVID thing is obviously we don't have any inside linebackers this week, you know, or whatever the case may be. I mean, that's for everyone. That's
our entire secondary is gone.
Yeah, yeah. We need some corners. I mean, certainly a challenge is coming. I think, what is it, Joey Bosa yesterday said something like, you know, the most disciplined team is going to be the one that wins, which is probably true to an extent, but also there's some luck involved in that too, because you can be disciplined and just do basic life stuff and still get the virus. And if where you live is just more rampant with the virus, then that increases your chance. So some of it is, you know, the best team may be the team that just happens to be in a better area.
Yeah.
And right now this is not one of those. So, I mean, because you think about COVID's impact on this discussion with the Titans, there was so much that they were probably going to do in the spring in this way.
Yeah.
And try things out with guys on the field. And now here we are in early August, and they still haven't had a chance to do any of that yet. So that alone. Now, the Titans, compared to other teams, still have a whole bunch of stuff that's just carrying over from last year to this year. They still have an advantage. But in that way, that's the concern. That's the change.
Joe, you brought up with Floyd, the NFL making the decision to move the opt-out deadline to this Thursday, according to Adam Schefter. What's kind of your general reaction to that news? We discussed yesterday on the show, Devin McCourty, the Patriots, was just highly upset that they could be moving the opt-out deadline. I'm sure he's not the only player that felt that way. It was originally supposed to take place a week after they signed the CBA. Now they've compromised, moved it to this Thursday. What's your reaction to that news?
Well, the players got some things out of this. So, again, that's the whole point of negotiating. Obviously, with the NFL, it's like, please get a hard date set. More and more guys are opting out. You know, you don't want more information to convince more players to opt out. So they've got their deadline, 4 o'clock Eastern, you know, 3 our time on Thursday. The players did get a little bit of, and I'm reading Dan Graziano's story on a couple of items that the players got. One is, you know, better protection on high-risk behavior. So, for example, going to a concert, something like that, which means if you get the virus and you haven't participated in that, then, you know, you can be disciplined. Those are going to be decided by an arbitrator now. Also, you know, front office employees and coaches can face discipline, and, I mean, that's how it should be. I mean, anybody who gets it should also be subject to the same thing the players are. And then they got a little bit better deal in terms of spreading the you know, the revenue shortfalls, potential revenue shortfalls over the next few years. So they got a little bit something out of it. The Players Association agreed to it. And as of Thursday afternoon, we'll know. We'll know who's in and who's out. So for the NFL fan, I think it's a good thing to know, okay, now I my quarterback is in or out, right. You know, and everyone will know and move forward from there.
And hopefully from a Titans point of view, you have a resolution on Vic Beasley one way or the other by Thursday as well. That's going to be important to monitor.
Yeah, we'll finally, this week we'll have an idea if Vic Beasley's playing football in Nashville this year.
Man, if he opts out, whew. And that defensive line, no Casey, Beasley not there. You know, Jadeveon Clowney at that point is probably just rubbing those hands together, about to start counting some money because, and if you're the Titans, you have to go talk to him at that point, right? Like, you've got
to
make it work.
I mean, you could try to go after, like, an Everson Griffin, which would be cheaper. You can really hope that, you know, DeAndre Walker is ready to explode in his first year in the NFL, second year, but he got hurt, and Derek Roberson and Reggie Gilbert. I mean, you know, you can hope this collection of guys can somehow manage enough production, but I don't know how you feel great about that.
When we come back, we'll dive back into the Preds discussion, discuss what a fast start could mean for this group today in Game 2. That's next. This is Morning Drive, live from the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.